You're listening to the Pop Zara podcast. We know there are a lot of other podcasts you're listening to right now, but we're glad you chose us.
Hello, Frank. You can call me the Doctor. I'm the one who operated on you. And the reason why is simple. You killed my brother. This operation's your reminder of the terrible thing you did. I've liberated you from the macho prison you've been living in.
Hello, welcome back to the Pop Zara podcast. This is your host, Nathan Evans, managing editor of PopZara.com, here to talk about the latest film from the legendary director Walter Hill, also known as The Assignment. Now, you may know Walter Hill from his legendary classics such as The Warriors, 48 Hours, Red Heat, and all four of the Alien films which he wrote or produced. But here today we're going to be talking about the film The Assignment, which tells the story of Frank Tomboy Kitchen, a hitman who's been forced to undergo gender reassignment surgery against his will by a crazed Shakespeare-obsessed doctor played by Sigourney Weaver. Played by Michelle Rodriguez, the newly feminized Frank now seeks to reverse the process, and the only path still available to him, revenge. Our guest today is the novelist, journalist, and screenwriter of the film, Mr. Dennis Hamill. Mr. Hamill, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you. Now, I'll be honest with you, what really caught me to this, we had seen the film, and one of my critics is actually working on a review of the film, and I don't really want to talk so much about the film itself, because I'll be honest with you, I liked it, but I have eclectic tastes, having grown up in the 80s. I like zombie films, I like gore films, I like things, and I can enjoy them without, you know, as Aristotle said, without necessarily becoming a serial killer or a maniac. But
right.
That's a hard concept now. Cognitive dissonance.
Yeah,
is,
but Aristotle
strong.
Also said that the first purpose of all writing is to entertain. So that's what we tried to do with this movie. It's an entertainment.
Well, unfortunately, I got some bad entertainment because of an interview you gave with the Daily Beast. And I think you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
You would talk to there's Samantha Allen. And I want to give credit to her because she actually admits to actually watching the film. Although I think if she also reviewed the film, but the more you read her review, it became clear that she was probably the worst person to review it. Not necessarily because she didn't like the film, that subjective opinion, but because she's, you know, you're a journalist, Dennis, so you know what I'm going to say. She's a beat reporter. And a long time ago, that used to mean that it was a reporter who covered a specific topic for a publication. But in today's lingo, it sort of means social activism. And, you know, one look at her oeuvre, and basically all of her work is entirely centered, I think 100% centered around LGBTQ headlines, with a big emphasis on trans-related issues. And I just want to say, having read the interview, I just want to applaud you, because despite the fact that she made childish insinuations and attacks, you didn't apologize for the film. And I appreciate that, because I don't think you did anything wrong. And I think you're
crying.
Well,
thank you for saying that. I mean, she
yes.
had written, this was the third piece that she did on this movie.
Yes.
The first one that she did was basically a review of the trailer.
Yes.
I said to her, I said, do you think it would be fair if I reviewed a press release for one of your books? And she didn't quite know how to answer that. Well, I said, you can't review the jacket copy of a novel. You have to read the novel. She took a one minute trailer that was not even cut by the director. It was cut by the distributor. And this is what you used to bash the film. And I think that's really unfair.
No, it was.
And it was. And then she went out of her way to quote, you know, a negative review from The Guardian that supported her argument. Meanwhile, she totally ignored a rave review from The Hollywood Reporter. And there were some other pretty good reviews. She just didn't. But that didn't seem to interest her at all. And she did no work. And it was just a straight up essay, you know, bashing the film for how dare we, you know, make this film. And I thought that was preposterous. I mean,
yes.
I think everything is fair game.
Well, I want to just say, Dennis, that I want to be clear that I have seen the film and I personally like it. And I think you know as well as I do that you can enjoy something and not necessarily, you know, perform a call to action and say, oh, pitchforks and torches. But the fact of the matter is the review was unfair because the review was going in, as you stated, she already had a chip on her shoulder. And I think she made some snarky remarks and she was more interested in tearing down the film for being boring. But on one hand, she would say the film made me want to fall asleep. It was boring. I was drowsy inducing. I think the word she looked up online was called soporific, which, you know, right. Thank you, thesaurus.com. On the other hand, she would point out details like pubic hair and everything because I think she was being intellectually dishonest. And the idea is that the review was more of an indignation of the film. And I'll be honest with you, I don't think this film deserves that, because I'll be honest with you, Dennis, the film is not transphobic because the main character is not transgender.
Well, that's what I said to her. I said that is a man who's now trapped in the body of a woman. He does not want to be where he doesn't want to be. So how could he be considered transgender? You know what happened? You know, he has been punished into this body, not by the mad doctor who was the sister of one of the victims of Frank Kitchen's hitman.
That's Sigourney Weaver's character.
And that's Sigourney Weaver, right? So the whole premise that of going after the film as being anti-transgender or transphobic is preposterous, because that's not what it is. It's just, and then she finally admitted that. And she admitted that to me, and when I spoke to her on the phone, she said, no, it is not transphobic. But, you know, the whole, she said, but it shouldn't have been made in this time. Now, if you know anything about filmmaking, you make the movie when you have the money. And if you have a cast like Michelle Rodriguez and Sigourney Weaver and Anthony LaPaglia and Tony Shalhoub, you're not going to say, let's put the finger up and test the political winds before we go and make our movie. You have to be kidding me. I wrote the script in 1978. And what the hell has wanted to make this movie since then?
You know, it's funny, though. I think your crime was that if you read between her lines, when she kept insinuating this is 2017, 2016, how can this movie be made now? You hear this argument that we progressed, that we are no longer allowed to enjoy exploitation films like this. And I think the argument doesn't hold any water, because your crime, Dennis, is that you didn't consult that community. And this reporter was positioning herself as sort of the arbiter. You didn't get the thumbs up and okay, because this film might be perceived as transphobic or homophobic according to this group of people. And like you said, she cherry-picked sources going back to 2015 to make her a point based on a film that no one had even seen based on the premise. That's not journalism.
Exactly right. No, and I lectured her on that. I told her that's just not fair journalism. First of all, I agree with you. She's the person who wrote the essay condemning the trailer of the film and the whole reason for his existence. It shouldn't be the person who reviews it.
Yes.
But, you know, and I'm not that hard to find, because I am a contributor to the Daily Beast.
Yes, I was going to mention that you contributed.
And it's not like she had to do a whole lot of work to find me. I mean, you know, you reached out to me, I got back to you.
Yeah, thank you.
You know, I'm open to talk about the film, and I'm not going to apologize for it. I like the film. It's different than the script that I wrote, but that's movie making, you know.
I once wrote
a thriller, that was a thriller set in a hospital during a blackout. But when Paramount Pictures bought it, they showed it to Richard Pryor. He said he wanted to make it, and they called me up and said, it's now a comedy. So, I mean... He became a Richard Pryor comedy.
By the way,
that's the movie business.
You brought it up, so I have to mention it. Critical Condition. I had a chat with my producer, Chris, right before the show. We both liked that film. We have an outstanding bet on this. Did you write Richard Pryor's lines for that film, or did he ad-lib?
He ad-libbed a lot of them.
Okay, cool.
And some of them he delivered, you know, he would. And then I was in a couple of scenes in it, and I couldn't remember my own lines. And he laughed. He laughed. You have to be said, you can't even remember your own life.
But, we were talking about that Dave Coulier actually ADR'd the sanitized version. And I just thought that was, my mind couldn't handle all that. It's like the Full House cast in Critical Condition. So
yeah, that's right. And he actually was such a gentleman. He said to me, he came over to me. I wrote it with my brother John. The two of us wrote it together. My brother John used to work, was a medic in Vietnam, and then came home and worked in Bellevue Hospital. So he had a lot of expertise in that. And about hospital, since we wrote the script, and he came over to us and said, you guys mind if I ad-lib some lines here? It's Richard. You're Richard Pryor. You can ad-lib the whole script if you want. Please do. You know, he was just a comic genius and a total gentleman. Great guy.
No, I want to go back real quick, because something else happened last week, and we kind of joke about this over here. We call it the outrage of the week, you know, like the almost the outrage of the day. Last week on Netflix, I don't know if you heard about this, but there was a show, one of the Marvel shows on Netflix. It was called Iron Fist. And the outrage machine went into effect because the main character is played by a blonde-haired, blue-eyed white guy who knows Kung Fu, and he becomes the master. And just like The Assignment, people were berating the trailer that had no knowledge of this character, had no knowledge of the history of this character. Again, like your script goes back to the 70s. And they said, and the argument was, well, this is 2017. We should update this. We should change this because we're upset by the presentation of cultural appropriation. I can't even say that word without flinching because it's such a stupid term. But when I think about this, I'll tell you what I thought about. My favorite part in your movie is the speech that Sigourney Weaver gives. I'm not – spoilers for anybody who hasn't seen it. But the scene when she gives her deposition, you know the courtroom scene when she's talking about why she did it. And she deadpans, and she's not apologetic. And she says, if I can quote, she said, you know, she tells about Frank, says, I have liberated you from the macho prison you've been living in. And her line was, I wrote this down. I really like this, by the way. If you wrote this, please, it's amazing. It says, by all accounts, he was a man who reveled in murderous activities as well as his masculinity. And that she says she performed the surgery partially as an experiment that if gender is identity, that even the most extreme surgical procedure would fail to alter the essence. That is not the words of a man who would become transgender against his will. That are the words of a doctor who performed an illicit surgery on someone against their will.
That's exactly right. We also took, by the way, we took a lot of grief in the press when this was first announced, that it was the movie was announced. GLAAD and different organizations and trans community were up in arms that we did not cast a transgender actor or actress in the lead. And we said, you know, I mean, this is again preposterous. First of all, it's a movie and we have what you call actors in it. And Michelle Rodriguez happens to be bisexual, and that's not why she was cast, but that maybe it's what attracted her to the material. I'm not sure. She liked it. She responded to it right away. But if you think that you're going to get somebody to finance a film with an unknown actor in the lead, good luck. You're not going to do that. I mean, Walter was able to make this movie when they guaranteed that he can get named stars in the lead. So,
well, the term that the reporter from the Daily Beast used, they use this term cisgender, which means the identity
which
of woman.
Which is brand new to me, by the way. Yeah.
Oh, it's a made up word. It's a made up term. And I want to go back to that, but I want to say I love Michelle Rodriguez. And let's be honest, she does have that aura that she could play a masculine character. James Cameron knows this, and you know, had she been around 20 years ago, she would have been the private Vasquez character in Aliens, not the great Jeanette Goldstein.
Right. She has an androgynous kind of appeal, yeah. So you know, she said to us up in Toronto. She said, "Listen, I do guys, I do girls, and no matter who you are, I'm with you. What's the beef here? I mean, she couldn't understand the outrage about it, you know."
Well,
and she was very upfront about it.
Well, think about it, though. They complained that Walter didn't cast a transgender character, but the character is not transgender. That would have been disingenuous.
That's the other problem.
That would have been disingenuous. You know, it's not like Ralph Fiennes playing Michael Jackson. You know, Michael Jackson by all accounts is whiter than Ralph Fiennes, but people get upset about everything. And I just want to get into this real quick because I think we're simpatico on this. But my problem is, and I wanted to get your opinion on this, and I don't want to attack Samantha Allen. I think she does what she does. I don't particularly think it's real journalism. I think it's social activism. And to its credit,
but
Daily,
and speaking to her on the phone, she was actually very pleasant, nice, and she wasn't, unkind in any way personally. But I don't think her journalism on this particular topic, on this particular movie, was fair. But anyway, go ahead. Continue.
Well,
sorry.
No problem. And I'm familiar with your work, and I know you're not exactly what they would call a right wing extremist by any stretch. Not even.
I'm a progressive liberal. I am.
Yes, but when I read her interview with you, you could tell something was happening. That you start seeing this happen to a lot of people from your generation, people like Richard Dawkins or Christopher Hitchens, people who would be not radical, but they would be part of the left. There'd be progressives that fought for social activism in their day. She kept maligning you. She even compared you to Clint Eastwood. The idea that you're making that association, that she's sort of pushing you over to the extremism because you don't get it. Like, you don't understand what you're writing about.
That I stuck to my guns like Clint Eastwood. That's what she said.
Yeah, that you didn't literally stick into your guns. But, you know, that's the problem, though. I think that's the problem, Dennis, is that you're not a right-wing extremist. And I don't think this film positions you as, not that I think there's any problem with that characterization, but I don't think she quite understood the point of the film, and I don't think that she was open-minded enough to go in to be entertained. I think she was going in there to bash.
Yeah, because I said to her, she said, you know, that you can't, you're making a movie where you're using a life-saving operation, exploiting a life-saving operation. I said, well, are you going to bash Michael Connelly for using a life-saving operation like a heart transplant in blood work that was played by Clint Eastwood? So she didn't make a reference to Michael Connelly. She made a reference to Clint Eastwood, who happened to be in the movie. But it was created by Michael Connelly, who's a terrific mystery writer.
Yeah, we review all his books.
And a former AP journalist and an LA Times journalist. I mean, just, you know, again, but she didn't make a reference to
I don't think she knew
him.
Who he was.
What she did was make a reference to Clint Eastwood, as if she was trying to put me in the same political position as him. It was just silly. You know, just,
well, I'll tell you what it reminded me of.
It's knee-jerk, and she, you know, she has a lot to learn about journalism. I told her that. I said, you're not, you know, what you do is not real journalism. I said to her, I have no idea how you got that first essay even past an editor. No good editor that I ever worked for would allow that piece in print, because you did not see the film. You were reviewing a trailer, and you did no work. You didn't even bother to call me. You didn't reach out to Sigourney Weaver, Michelle Rodriguez, Walter Hill, or anybody. Any of the people, all the people on this film who made this film are all kind of progressive people. And you were trying to paint this as a group of transphobic, you know, reactionaries. And that's just unfair and not true. It's just not
true. She was one syllable away from calling you an old white man, which is the new slide. But I want to go back, but you know what?
I'm an old white man, but I was a young white man when I wrote it in 1978. So, and I've been writing a newspaper column that has been more progressive than anything that she's ever written for all those 40 years. So, I'll stand on my work any day against her.
She is writing for an audience of people who don't need to be converted. They need to be satiated. And you're the red meat that makes them feel better about indulging in ignorance, because this is how journalism is now. Journalism is, we make assumptions, we don't do the diligence, we want our opinions validated, because to remain ignorant is to remain strong. And I want to, before we wrap this up, I want to make two points real quick. One thing, you go back to these genre films, and my staff here, they love genre films to death, and they love a lot of, again, not just Critical Condition, they love the Walter Hill films, even Bullet to the Head, which is not his best, but it's a pretty good movie. But I was reminded of things like old movies like Boxing Helena, or even Old Boy, where you take this, I'm sure you've seen both, it's an unpleasant thing, but it's a movie and it satisfies, and it doesn't make you a pervert. It doesn't make you, you know, a misogynist to watch a movie about, you know, chopping a woman's arms and legs off and putting her in a box, you know, but
That's exactly right.
Yeah, it's
make you a vigilante to like Death Wish. I mean, you know, it was an entertaining movie based on a novel by a guy named Brian Garfield. You know, it was about New York at a certain time, and it had a real resonance, and it was a really good entertainment. And that's what they're not getting, that when you make movies, you're obligated to entertain the audience, and that's what, you know, Walter set out to do. It's what I set out to do when I wrote the script, and it wasn't. The movie is not about transgender.
No,
the whole philosophy of the whole lifestyle, or the people that, you know, who get that surgery, you know, willfully. And this is an entertainment about somebody who's transformed into the body of a woman against his will as revenge, and then sets out on a revenge herself. It's really himself.
I just want to bring up two things before we get out, and that is what it reminded me of, and this is the part when you know she wasn't doing her diligence. When you have Sigourney Weaver's character basically using gender reassignment surgery as a weapon, you know, to basically demasculate, to cut the balls off of this guy, literally and figuratively, you know, turn him into a killer. You're reminded, you know, it's the whole idea of nature versus nurture. Like this is something this particular group believes, that there's no difference between the genders, that the only reason a boy likes playing with toys and going to war is because that's what society says. And the only reason a girl likes playing with dolls is because she's been limited. And you see this in Target. They take away the pink colors. You see this in toys. But time and time again, Dennis, this proves to be a false argument. You know, people like B.F. Skinner, who does things like the Skinner Box. But your movie reminded me of this case. I don't know if you heard of it. The case of the boy, his name was David Reimer. And he was the boy who's, when they was being circumcised, when he was being cut, his penis was cut off. And the doctor said, you know what, don't worry, we'll raise him as a girl. He'll never know. You know, his theory, again, was this nature versus nurture. It's a true case. And so the parents raised this boy as a girl and never knew. And as the boy grew older, he realized, I like boy things. You know, I like playing baseball. I like doing this. Eventually, they told him what happened. He was much happier. Eventually, though, because of the experience, he committed suicide. And it was a tragic case, but that's the speech that Sigourney Weaver character reminded me of, that you're still a man inside. You're still a man inside, if that's what you believe it. Yeah. And, you know, but that contradicts this theory that you are what society tells you you are, that there's no inherent, you know, masculinity, that masculinity is toxic, that if you're a man, that's a bad thing, and therefore to remove it would be a crime. But, you know, I'm getting into the weeds too much, but I just want to bring up one thing. Did you see the film The Danish Girl that came out a few years ago? Okay.
Yeah.
Now, this movie was reported as a true story, that a heroic journey of a man who became a woman. I saw the movie. I didn't really care for it too much. But I did my research. I found out the entire movie is predicated on a lie. It was a fictionalized account. Didn't happen. And they said as such. And what happens is they left certain parts out. Like when your journalist talks about gender reassignment surgery being a life-saving thing, that might be true, but there's evidence to suggest that it doesn't always work, that some people want to reverse it, whereas you have the John Hopkins, you know, university, they don't even perform the surgery anymore because they said it doesn't really affect. But that's not the message they want to get out. And I'm not making the argument that certain people shouldn't have it, but there are cases when
I would never make that argument.
Exactly. But, you know, in that particular film, this person received gender reassignment surgery and died from the complications. You know, and so, but no mention was made of the absence, you know, that with every surgery there's risk, because the presentation of the Danish film had to be completely positive, that any criticism of the operation, any criticism of the want to do it would be considered transphobic. And that's fine with them, right? Because it's a fiction. It's being critical is not being phobic. Being critical is not being phobic. But that's
they criticized that Redmayne was cast in it too. That a man was cast in the role.
Exactly.
I didn't know that the movie was fictionalized that much.
Oh yes.
I knew that. I mean, almost every Hollywood movie is. You know.
Oh yes.
We have to take liberties in doing certain things. You just, because you have 2 hours to tell someone's life sometimes, and so you have to make some concessions, but. Anybody that goes to the movies to try to get their history is nuts. That's not where you're going to find it. But I mean, I think people should read.
Yes.
You know, if they want to know, which you obviously did on that. Particular film.
Well, you know what happened.
I mean, The French Connection is not entirely, you know, is fictionalized. I mean, there's so many of these movies that are based on true stories are completely fictionalized. They have to be. I mean, Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid, all. I mean, there's so many of them that we think of as true stories that are, you know, are always altered by Hollywood. That's the way it is.
The idea, though, that if we're going to start talking about transgender rights, which we should have that conversation, but that conversation needs to be open to criticism. And it can't
be
one-way street. You know, it can't be like this reporter who came in with a gigantic chip on her shoulder to basically chastise you because you're not educated in the way she and that community is. And I find that I find that offensive, not as a reader, but I find that offensive as a human being, that we talk about transgender people, we talk about gay people as though they're not there, as though they can't defend themselves, or they can't enjoy movies like The Assignment, because they're going to be personally offended. And I trust me, I have a lot of transgender friends. They're not that homogenous at all. I mean,
yeah, I don't know if this woman has ever reviewed another film. I think this might be her first movie review. I'm not too sure, but I looked for other ones. I couldn't find them.
That happens a lot where these activists get charged to review films, and you realize they're not reviewing a film. They're sort of cleansing it. They're putting it through the ringer because their audience wants their bias confirmation. It's, you know what? I think we probably did that ad nauseum, but I just want to say, Dennis, thank you very much for showing up today, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you about this. And I think
people
are going to listen to this and either call us transphobes or homophobes or what phobes. That's okay. We didn't do anything wrong. I like the film, and I encourage people.
We made
a
movie that's highly entertaining. It's, you know, if you know anything about Walter Hill's films, if you like, as you said, 48 Hours, Last Man Standing, if you like The Warriors, this is a movie you'll probably like. You know.
Yes.
If you don't, then maybe it's the wrong picture. Who knows?
Well,
but
I would
give it a chance. It's only a movie. That's what I try to tell people.
I will leave the audience with this, that you should engage in the radical idea that you should watch something or read something or experience something for yourself before you judge it, because that's right. That's not how it should work otherwise.
Yeah.
Again, well, our guest today on the Popzara podcast has been famous novelist, journalist, screenwriter Dennis Hamill, talking about his new film directed by Walter Hill called The Assignment. Thank you, Dennis, for showing up.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
The Assignment is available on VOD, where you can find it. Get it before it's been banned and censored. Thanks, everybody.
And it comes out in theaters on April 7th, by the way.
April 7th. Thank
It'll
you.
Be in, yeah, April 7th in theaters. Okay. Thank
yes.
you. If you like what you hear, why not leave us a review or rating? Not only do we appreciate the feedback, but it helps our ranking and expands our audience. Every little bit helps.